Well, thank you very much. Pleasure to be in with you tonight. Matter of fact, next weekend, I believe we're it's going to be a zombie jambi weekend. I'll sit in for Ship's Captain George Nori on Friday, and then we'll do the soiree on Saturday. Okay. Well, thank you very much for becoming a Coast Insider. If you did, and if you didn't, you should, because it's a great little service. It really is. It's inexpensive, and there are 3 years of archive programs, over 1,000 of them. You can listen to them whenever you want, in case you want to get some sleep at night, which I hope you're not doing that right now, and don't happen to be a Coast Insider, because that's just not good for you. All right. Go to coasttocoastam.com, and all the details are there. Interesting, I just saw a little blurb here. I'm trying to read it and talk to you at the same time, which is dangerous. Roan says, what happened to Kim was China's two major banks froze all of North Korea's accounts, happening 3 days before the removal of the intermediate-range missiles on their eastern coast, the ones thought to threaten Japan, etc. So, there you go. Thanks, Roan. I'll look into it, and I'm sure you're accurate. I will verify, and if I just blurted out something that's completely false, well, I'll say so. All right, we're right back with Josh Reeves in just a moment. This is Coast to Coast AM. Josh Reeves, I know that you... that you research matters concerning government, corporate corruption, occult, esoteric philosophies, mass media, propaganda, social engineering, hidden technologies, ancient mysteries, religious, spiritual manipulations, and much more. How do you find the time for all of this? You're a busy guy.
Well, I've dedicated myself to doing this full-time and researching full-time and doing radio full-time and making films. So the only way that we're ever going to have any real inkling of the truth is if people are willing to put themselves on the line and to dedicate themselves to finding the truth. And this is absolutely what I was put on earth to do, and that's what I do. And so that's what enables me to find the things that I do, because when I started researching on my own when I was younger, there was a thing where, you know, you did it in your spare time, you did it for fun. But when I started doing a radio show in 2007, it put me in a position to where I couldn't just, you know, be lazy about it and not research. When you're put into a position where, you know, you have people waiting on films or people waiting on radio shows and waiting on your content, it does make you dedicate yourself more to it so that you constantly have new things. And I think that was something I didn't really count on, didn't really know was going to happen when I first started doing this. And I'm thankful that it has, because doing the radio show has been single-handedly what has taken my research to the level it is now. And again, you know, everything that I do is as a result of people who listen to what I work and donate to what I do and buy my films and everything else. And that's how I'm able to do this. Because, as we talked about here tonight, John, again, you know, we can blame governments. Excuse me. We can blame governments. We can blame, you know, secret societies, the Illuminati. We can blame all these people. But at the end of the day, we are the ones to blame if we don't stand up and try to at least give our best effort to do something about it. And that's what I'm trying to do.
That's outstanding. You know, going back to these burial mounds, I guess people looked at those giants and went, I'm not digging a hole for that. I know. Let's cover it up with a lot of dirt and make a burial mound instead of digging a grave to try and put this giant in. That makes perfect sense to me. But when I was a kid, I read a story. You know, back when I was a kid, we liked science. We were interested in science. We weren't even referred to as nerds. The girls liked guys who were interested in engineering and science and stuff like that. They liked the football players too, make no mistake. But they liked people who were interested in the true nature of our reality. And I remember reading a story about a burial mound in Ohio. I don't know why so many of them are in Ohio. Maybe you've got an insight into that, but something to the effect that there was a tablet underneath a mummified, they didn't say it was a giant, at least not that I recall. They may have, but I just don't recall it. But what I do recall is that the stone underneath the remains, the skull, had some interesting carving in it, and it was revealed when it was turned. They assumed, I mean, this was just a story, I didn't write it, but they said the way that it was positioned under the skull suggested that you read it this way, and they didn't recognize it. But when they flipped it around the other way and cleaned it up a little more, so to where they could read everything that had been carved into the stone. It was an ancient form of Hebrew. And that kind of goes back to what you were saying about this continent is experiencing exposure to stuff from the, what is known as the Middle East now, and probably vice versa. So how do you, did you ever hear that story? And if, and why is so much of this stuff seem to show up in Ohio?
Well, yes, actually, I briefly mentioned it in the film, and I actually do show the it was a slate stone roof that covered the grave. And yes, you are correct, though, John. It was it was indeed a giant that was found under there. I report on it in the film. But they uncovered this slate rock roof that had these weird, strange hieroglyphics on it. And those seem to be similar to some of the stuff that was found at the rock wall, and as well as a coin that was found in Illinois in a well that was in a soil strata that dated to 200,000-plus years. So in Ohio, what we have in Ohio is we have not only the Serpent Mound in Ohio, but we also have the Newark Earthworks, as well as a variety of other mounds. The Serpent Mound itself, as I talked about earlier, being aligned to Draco, being aligned to Cygnus, sitting on top of an ancient meteorite impact, which is chock full of a rare earth metal called iridium, which is very highly sought after by the military-industrial complex because it's used in, they're trying to create a new energy source that uses iridium that basically is like, you know, endless. It's kind of like unobtainium in Avatar. But this Serpent Mound in Ohio is chock full of this. And in fact, if you try to go near it with magnetic instruments, it'll just burn up. Same with the rock wall, because of the highly charged magnetic signature of this structure. Now, the Serpent Mound is actually a centerpiece of a giant zodiac wheel, the largest and oldest zodiac wheel ever found anywhere on Earth, that stretches through not only Ohio, but through Kentucky, Iowa, several surrounding states where there are also animal effigies that are mounds that are found in these states. And if you were to view it from way high up in the air, and all these mounds were still intact as they were, you know, 1,000 years ago or whatever, you would see this giant earthwork that is a zodiac wheel. And then you have the Newark earthworks, which are there. But the Serpent Mound itself seems to be highly revered by someone who was here far back in antiquity before what we know as the Native Americans. And with the Newark earthworks, you have a gematria, a mathematical code encoded into this, again, with a with an alignment that mirrors a religious belief that goes back to ancient Egypt and also goes back to the Tibetan Book of the Dead as well. It's found encoded into these sites, the Newark earthworks. As far as why there's so many in Ohio, it just seems to me from the whatever significance the Serpent Mound has, it was put there for a reason, and it has some sort of highly, highly important reason for being there and for being preserved. So these are not just in Ohio, but we have Kentucky, we have Alabama. I mean, they're spread out all throughout the United States, and there was just an explosion of these. You know, we had Native Americans in the United States prior to 800 AD, but around 800 to 1250 AD, there was just an explosion of these. As there seemed to be some sort of new migration that happened around that time. And this is also when you started to see Native American religious ceremonies and whatnot change, and the tribes take on a tribal structure that mirrors the structure of the 12 tribes of Israel to a T. So going back to your question of, you know, why in Ohio did they find this type of script there? Well, they found Libyan, Ibunic, Punic writing. They found all sorts of Phoenician artifacts that date back hundreds of thousands of years all over the United States. The Cherokee themselves describe the Phoenicians coming over on boats across waterways and speaking really their tribe with language. I mean, it's all over the place. But again, as you said earlier, we're not being told this in our history books, and people don't even know to go look for it because they don't even know what's there.
You know, Josh, I got to tell you something, and I'm not blowing smoke at you. You sound like you got a lot of energy and a lot of passion. What do you attribute? I opened the program tonight with a discussion of how these mice, these Germans, did an experiment with these mice and gave them a rich environment, and some of them would be adventurous and some of them wouldn't. And the ones who did went through neurogenesis, whatever, the building and developing of new neurons, and they developed these individual personalities, even though they were genetically identical to the other mice and they were raised or allowed to play in the same area. So they had the same environment, they had the same genetics, but some of the adventurous ones, got into the wheels and the tubes and everything, they developed, they became smart little mice. And what I'm getting at is, are we dealing with, I was about to submit to you that, are there a question that would be, are there just so many people now that this cannot be risked? And then immediately I answered my own question with, well, look, when this continent was a lot less populated, the smaller population groups still had problems with each other and made war on each other and vied for power. So it's the same thing whether you've got a lot of people on the continent or few people on the continent. But the question is, what do you attribute your adventurous spirit to? I mean, were your parents adventurous? Did you hunt and fish and camp? And did you tear a motorcycle or a lawnmower engine apart? Or, I mean, were you always into investigations, or did you just have an aha moment? Because this body of work that all these things that you're not only trying to do, but you're actually doing, is really quite impressive. And I'm just wondering what was your fire when you were in your developmental stage as a person?
It just came from and really still is just a sheer desire of personal knowledge and wanting to know the truth, a desire to know the truth. And I mean a burning desire. I don't know, John, why I have this. It's not something that really my parents had, or anybody else in my family for that matter, but from a young age. I mean, John, I started researching UFOs when I was in the third grade.
No, I'm not kidding.
I'm not exaggerating. I started researching UFOs when I was in the third grade, Bermuda Triangle stuff, moved on to, the Kennedy assassination when I was, about 14, 15, something like that. And, it's funny, living in Dallas my whole life, I never even knew or heard about the Kennedy assassination until I was about 14, 15 years old. And my grandmother took me, I'll never forget it, she took me in her room and she opened up a safety deposit box and she took all these newspapers out from the day of when the assassination happened in Dallas and stuff. And I was looking at these newspapers, and I remember looking at these newspapers, seeing things that were reported the day of the assassination that were contradictory to things I had heard were the official story now in the current day. And that was a moment for me, John. That was a moment when I saw that, when I realized, oh my gosh, there actually is something to this. And, after 9/11 for me, I'd kind of been, I've been a musician for a lot of years and kind of bounced around, no direction. And after 9/11 happened, I had a pretty good tech job at that time, and it got shipped off to India, and I didn't get my job back, and I was sitting there going, well, what am I going to do? And finally, I just said, look, I've got all this information. I've got this drive. I've got to try to do something about this to let people know what's going on. And it really has become more than I ever dreamed it would. I never thought I'd be here talking about the lost secrets of ancient America and this whole thing where, our the truth about this country and the truth about civilizations that have been rising and falling here eons before we were settling here. It's unbelievable. I never thought it'd get here, but you go where the information takes you. And that's what I've done in all this. I've always just followed the information, and this is where it's led.
Well, it's pretty amazing stuff. Now, I've even heard that, in fact, one of these, one of the unsealed alien files, there's a discussion of, very, very unusual, let's just say very unusual skulls in their archive, that this nun says, well, the Holy Fathers must have had a very good reason for keeping these put away so they'd be forgotten. I just wonder what would happen if information like this was made available to kids when they're at an impressionable age. I mean, certainly, it could be some poor, twisted person later in life that is helping to obscure the truth. But in the beginning, certainly, they would be. There's always an apple that's going to work for them. But I'm just wondering where we could be now. It doesn't seem like we're evolving very much as a civilization. It seems like we're devolving, and our adventure is being limited to a little smartphone. Just stare at that thing all day instead of getting out into the world. And I mean, I think those devices are wonderful for accessing information, but you have to have the desire to access the information once you have a target for acquiring your information. And I just wonder if it's ever going to take, and if we can kind of pull ourselves out of this quagmire of daily trauma, big or small, and get on to the things that I think are important, our history and who we really are, and where the humanity originates, and so forth. It seems that more and more people are becoming interested in it, and the ones who are already interested in it are more verbal about it. But what would you suggest as far as people getting into this, other than just, well, pick something and go for it? How can people get involved? I mean, I have no idea how you even came across all of these articles from the 1800s, except you just, as you said, start following the information. So how do you motivate people to do as you have done?
That's a very good question. I think that it really has to boil down to the individual. And I think that every single person has there. I believe that there's one issue. I've found this to be true. I believe that there's one issue, and you may not be able to very well find that what that is very easily, but I believe there's one issue for every person. I believe that every person has that one thing that if they're awakened to it, it will lead them towards looking at all these other things. And that's really all it takes. So I think for someone who's trying to get into researching stuff for themselves and doing this, that's the main thing. You have to do research on your own and not even believe what the mainstream media tells you, and don't even believe what I tell you without going looking into it. A lot of the stuff that you look at in terms of the Lost Secrets of Ancient America, you know, you'll find, if you go research it, you'll find this, the classic, that's fake, that's natural, this, that, and the other. You have to research this stuff on your own, look at the facts, become informed about what you're talking about and what you're dealing with, and then the truth will present itself to you because you have taken it upon yourself to become informed and be myopic about a topic that maybe you hadn't done before, maybe you hadn't looked into before. But it comes down to not putting your knowledge and your understanding of things and your grasp of the truth in anyone's hands but your own. You have to take what I say, what John B. Wells says, and what everybody else says out there, take that, absorb it in, look into it for yourself, and then make your own decisions based on that information that's presented to you. That's what I try to do in this film, John. I don't try to beat anybody over the head with a belief or come to a conclusion that is already predetermined before we start. I simply take the information, present it, and allow people, based on the evidence, to be, as you said earlier, rational about this and look at this in a way that will tell you. When you look at the information contained in my film, you will be able to make a decision for yourself what this is and what it isn't. And that, at the end of the day, is all I ask for people that watch this film.
How can we get, how can anybody who wants the DVD, how can they get it easily?
Well, that's a good question. You can go to my website, theglobalreality.com. You can also go to Google and just type Josh Reeves in, and the first website that comes up will be mine. And there's a link there at the top of the page. It says purchase Josh, get a sneak peek and purchase Josh Reeves' newest and most groundbreaking documentary yet. You click that, and the film is there in DVD and Blu-ray as well. You can also get a digital download in standard resolution and high resolution, and you can download that instantly, and it's a copy you own. It's not a rental or anything. And, you know, if everybody out there in the listening audience got a copy of our film, we could really do a lot more. So I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to tell people where to get it there, John. Thank you.
I'm looking at your site right now, and it has several interesting stories on it. There's a mysterious 30-foot-long rotting sea monster with quotes around it, with huge teeth found washed up on New Zealand beach, and there's mystery aircraft buzzing over city from dusk till dawn for 2 weeks, scaring residents, but authorities won't tell them what it's doing. And then Russian billionaire reveals real-life avatar plan and says he'll upload his brain to a hologram and become immortal by 2045. This is serious stuff.
And this is daily, everyday mainstream news. It's not the tinfoil times, John. I mean, this is stuff that's just there out in the open.
I'm beginning to think, you know, well, I'll mention it later because I hear one of my favorite tunes. In fact, I actually made this my ringtone. This is Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, called Pinned and Mounted. You heard it in the, if you saw the film Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, when they're starting to figure it out. This is in the background. Score suggests adventure, doesn't it? Yeah, this is Coast to Coast AM. Well, thank you very much. It is a it's a pleasure to sit in with you on Saturday nights. I'm serious. I can't think of anything that I would rather do than hang out with you for a few hours and talk with excellent, adventurous guests like Josh Reeves. His website, theglobalreality.com, I'm looking at one called The Unsolved Mystery of the Van Meter Visitor, a winged creature with a glowing horn that caused terror in an Iowa town 110 years ago. Here it is quickly. A bizarre legend, an unsolved mystery, which has haunted a small Iowa town for more than 100 years, is the subject of a new book called The Van Meter Visitor. For several nights in 1903, the small town of Van Meter, Iowa, was terrorized by a giant bat-like creature that emerged from an old abandoned mine. The identity of this mysterious monster has never been discovered, but over 100 years later, a new book is retelling the amazing tale and hoping to shed some light on what happened all those years ago. The legend dates back to the fall of 1903, when several of Van Meter's most well-respected citizens reported a half-human, half-animal with enormous, smooth bat wings flying about. The creature is described as moving at speeds the townsfolk had never witnessed before, plus it let off a powerful stench and shot a blinding light from its horned head. Each time the townsfolk encountered the creature, they fired their guns at it, but this appeared to have no impact on the creature. I don't know about you, but I've always found it to be a really bad idea to discharge a firearm at a flying saucer or a winged creature that's emitting a beam. That just doesn't seem like a prudent thing to do. We'll be right back with Josh Reeves in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. All right, Josh Reeves, let's change gears just slightly. You study and research secret and ancient societies. There's just so much to talk to you about, and as I look at these various subjects, it seems that they are actually all interrelated. You made mention about how, these giants were here before the red man got here. It's like, what? Well, where did the red man come from? Some have suggested Asia. Some have suggested the Middle East. You've already mentioned a Middle East crossover. So I'm wondering, which of these secret societies really stands out among all the others? Maybe there's more than one. And maybe there's an associated bloodline that is still around today. You know, they've been bandying these theories around, or at least these little, I'm not going to say theories, these little bits of information about how Tony Blair, George Bush, Al Gore, and Bill Clinton are all related distantly, all out of England or somewhere, you know, obviously in Europe, since Europeans didn't just spontaneously appear. We actually traveled here. So which society stands out as the one that might still be viable today, maybe more than one? And is anybody we know carrying the same blood from the ancient days when these societies came into being?
Well, that's a huge question, and answer that, because it's really entailed. I do have a lot of info on it, but it's something that I've been acquiring information on for years and years and years and years. So, as far as the secret societies and which one is the most powerful, and you know which one is the most powerful today, and this, that, and the other. It really doesn't matter, because as you stated, they're all offshoots and they all spawn from the same place. They all had their genesis in the same spot. And this was a secret society known as the Serpent Brotherhood, or the Brotherhood of the Snake. And this was the original secret society that originated in ancient Mesopotamia in the Sumerian Babylonian days. And originally it was created so that mankind could know who we are, where we come from, and what our destiny is. And this was originally intended to be taught to mankind in secret. This is where the secrecy that's related to secret societies originally comes from, is this thing where it was known at the time to the people who were handing this information to humans. It was a known fact that in the wrong hands and with the wrong intent, this knowledge and information could be used not as the greatest tool for the fulfillment of mankind and his destiny, but for the opposite of that, for the enslavement and destruction and control of mankind. And that is exactly what has happened. So in my film, we talk about how these sprung and what they started with. And they started out as the Brotherhood of the Serpent, Brotherhood of the Snake, then it evolved into the Egyptian and Babylonian mystery schools. And then later, you had proponents such as King Solomon practicing various types of magic in these different societies. Then you had the Templars, and you had the Los Alumbrados Society, which later became the Illuminati that people know of with Adam Weishaupt. Freemasonry spawned after that, all these other groups. But in the end, when you trace back where all of these groups had their origins, they all go back to this same, what they call the sacred knowledge and the information of the mystery schools that deals with advanced technology that, if we had access to, would not allow all of us to live in the current reality we live in. With the withholding of that information, that is what brings us up to date. But the thing about the bloodlines ties exactly into this as well. These bloodlines were originally the ones, this is how the priest class was created, which eventually spawned things like Rome and the Vatican and the rest of that. But it started in ancient Sumeria with the priests, because in those days there was no government, there was no heads of state, all this. The rulers and the people who were the government at that time were the priests, and they were the ones who had this divine information, and they decided how much of it man would know and how much of it wouldn't. And at that moment, that's when you started to have control. And these groups eventually spread out throughout the entire world and took on various names. And now, in our modern day, they take on the appearance of groups like the Council on Foreign Relations and the Bilderberg Group and the Council for National Policy and all these other various think tanks and the Royal Institute of International Affairs, on and on and on. And essentially, what these groups are, they're just the modern day purveyors that make sure that this great work, as they call it, is perpetuated into the future indefinitely. And as you were talking about earlier, yes, it's absolutely true. Even CBS News reported on this stuff about Barack Obama, George Bush, you know, Dick Cheney, even celebrities like Justin Timberlake and Brad Pitt being in these bloodlines. And the Bush family bloodline actually goes back to Ramses II in Egypt. These groups have been warring over the lands in the Middle East for many, many years. And when you see how these bloodlines trace back to someone like Darius, King Darius in the original Iran, which, of course, Iran means Aryan, and that was the original people that inhabited that land, the people in charge of these bloodlines today of the world power structure believe those ancient lands that are considered, you know, the biblical lands and the Middle Eastern lands, they consider that to be their birthright. This is why there has been the genocide going on in the Middle East for all these years, because the bloodlines that have been in power since time immemorial are now in the modern day attempting to take back what they believe to be their ancestral heritage land. This is why all of the focus has been on the Middle East for the past 20-something years.
Maybe longer than that. I can remember seeing, when I was in elementary school, I remember seeing an old secret agent. I mentioned Patrick McGoohan earlier. He appeared in this country on the show called Secret Agent. And I thought it was very interesting, because there was a cocktail party going on with some dignitaries and businessmen and so forth. And this one man made a declaration that the next big conflict area was going to be about oil, and it would be the Middle East. And I held on to that, and there was not much going on in the Middle East until the 67, I think it was, Israeli war and so forth. But this was like before that, and I thought it was interesting that they tipped the hand on the hand of the globalists on that one. Maybe they were just being fanciful in their screenwriting, and maybe they had an inside thing and decided to just drop it in there. Who really knows? I don't know who wrote the script. But now you're saying that that there is strong evidence to suggest that the the reason that things never change is because it's the same families that are involved in it.
Absolutely. And in many cases, these families have been interbreeding throughout the various years to keep their bloodlines pure. There's a great picture of Tsar Nicholas from Russia, and I think it was King George, one of the kings from England. I can't remember. It was for sure Tsar Nicholas, but these guys were, you know, in completely separate continents from each other. One was a Russian czar. The other was a king in England, and they look like identical twins in this picture. And that picture, in my mind, John, is the greatest example of this bloodline and this interbreeding thing. When you see these two gentlemen who come from completely different parts of the world and aren't said to, you know, be considered family, and yet they are identical twins because of this bloodline interbreeding and how it has continued through the centuries.
That's extraordinary. You hear a lot of stuff about the Freemasons. And what you see, you know, what the public sees is they're good. They do good work. But many people have suggested, the Freemasons have extraordinary power, and they go back a long time, and they actually are behind the scenes pulling all sorts of cords and strings and pushing buttons. Did the Freemason show up on your scope? And as far as the ancient organizations and societies part.
Well, absolutely, and they were spawned from the Servant Brotherhood, as I discussed earlier. But I think the Freemasons, I discussed them at length and their connections to all of this in The Lost Secrets of Ancient America, Volume 1. And, you know, my thing that I found through all my research is that I think the Freemasons, as well as being involved in so much stuff, they also get assigned a lot of blame that they don't deserve as well. There are other groups operating that, they're essentially using Freemasonry as a red herring in many cases. The basic thing, and this is from years and years and years, John, I've spent many years reading actual Masonic texts. I've spent years reading their books, reading what they believe, many, many years. I have many in my own collection as well. I've spent years reading this stuff. I have found, without joining Freemasonry, what the key essence of Freemasonry and the belief really is. It is a belief that goes back thousands of years, again, back to ancient Sumeria, ancient Egypt, and it's this knowledge of the ability to transcend the death of the physical body and essentially immortality, jumping from one body to another through history. There are examples of this, people that have been seen jumping through time and jumping through history. There's one count in particular, not Cagliostro, but I always draw a blank on this guy's name. Somebody will probably remind me of it in a minute. But there's all kinds of reports of these guys essentially being seen in various different times when they shouldn't have been alive. So I think what we start to see is that with Freemasonry or any of these other groups, Freemasonry, of course, is a secret society, but the fact that you do have people at the highest levels that are members of Freemasonry has less to do with them being the proprietors of a world conspiracy and has more to do with the fact that the people at the highest levels want this knowledge and this information because they know it goes back yet again to their bloodlines that trace all the way back to the beginning of this after the Great Flood in what was then known Sidonia. That's what Mesopotamia and Iraq and Samaria was called first. It's interesting that Iraq is on the 33rd degree parallel, 33 being very important to the Freemasons. Sidonia on Mars, where the alleged face was found on Mars, is also called Sidonia, and conveniently enough, it's also on the 33rd degree parallel as well. The rock wall is on the 33rd degree parallel here in Dallas. Dallas is a huge military-industrial complex city. I don't have to tell you, John, but you're a local here as well. You know about how important Dallas is to the power structure. George Bush lives here. So it's highly interesting to see that these groups, like the Freemasons and others, are quite aware of things like the rock wall because of their locations. They're quite aware of the power that they contain, and what they're actually used for. And at every turn, again, we start to see, you know, evidence that, oh, yeah, the Freemasons had that in their possession. Oh, the Freemasons had this part of the rock wall or something in their possession. I know there was one case that I cover in the film where there was one of these giant skeletons that were found that was taken to a Masonic lodge and used in rituals. So if, you know, if these guys are into this and there's nothing to what I have found about Freemasonry, again, why is it that every turn you see evidence that traces back to these giants and their connection to Freemasonry as well? I mean, at this Masonic lodge I visited in Guthrie, Oklahoma, you have the swastika in a Native American room, pool room, made for Native Americans to come play pool, and the swastika goes back again to the Phoenicians, back to the Middle East again, and there was no reason why the Native Americans should have had this. And it's very apparent from the artifacts that have been found that, again, this was one of those symbols, one of those things that was brought here from another place that didn't originate from.
You know, that's interesting that you mentioned the swastika, because there's a company that is a little specialty company. They send me a catalog every once in a while. They just have the oddest stuff, and it's just wonderful. I mean, you can get a French officer's wine carafe or something for $30 or something, just with a little anchor on it and everything. Get all the strange stuff, and one of the things that they recently offered was a set of poker chips, yellow, green, and red, and blue, and all of them had a swastika. And they said the little note there they had printed that no, these aren't from Germany during the 30s and 40s. These are actually from a Native American gambling casino. And you know, people used to send them. That symbol used to be on Christmas cards, holiday cards,
right?
Back in the 30s. I remember a house had one set into its bricks.
Yeah,
it's been painted over since because people don't think that's appropriate now because they don't understand what it means anymore. Anyway, cut you off. Go ahead.
No, I just say it's a sun symbol. That's originally what it was used for. It was originally a symbol for the sun, and actually how the Nazis turn it. It actually makes it like a candid square, so it makes it like a magical square and distorts the use for it. It makes it an evil sigil instead of something that, you know, was just there to represent the sun and what that provides, life and all this. So that's a very interesting correlation that you see with a lot of the ancient information, the ancient symbology. You can see how a lot of it has been corrupted. And that's, as I was talking about, with this, all of this knowledge, all of this information, you know, people say, oh, the Freemasons, they're evil or they're a cult and all this. Well, the thing about it is the information itself is not what is evil. It's what it does in the hands of the person who holds it. It's just like a gun. You know, a gun on itself, a gun has never killed anyone, but a person with a gun has killed people. It's the same thing with this information. So what I have tried to do in all of my work, and I've read on my radio show many of these esoteric books on air. You can get the audiobooks, download for free at my website, and there's tons of great information and commentary from me in there. And I basically, you know, take people through some of these ancient Freemasonic books and ancient texts on air, and while I'm reading it, give my take on it so that we can sort of have the aha moments together and really delve into this and learn exactly what this information is and hopefully put it in the hands of people who want to do good and not evil. And that's what really my main goal for all of this is.
Now, where can we hear your radio show? Is it live or is it a podcast or how do we hear it?
Well, it's live. It's at my my website, theglobalreality.com, and we're in the process of right now. We go on pretty much the same hour, coast to coast, to Amazon at various times, and we're looking to go back to a midnight Central Standard Time very quickly. But it's Monday through Friday, and people can go to my website. They can subscribe to my archives there as well and get all the past shows. You can also go to YouTube and type Josh Reeves in, and there's all kinds of shows there, as well as archive.org. There's tons of free shows there. So I've got about 6 years worth of content all out there on the internet people can access for free. But the new film is not up for free because we've got to try to be able to make the next one. So if people help us get that accomplished, that will be that'll be fantastic.
Yeah, money isn't everything, but it is part of it, right?
Oh, you can't make films and you can't travel all these states without a budget. That's the bottom line. I wish you could do it for free, but you can't.
You know, you can't run down to your post office without some sort of a budget. And by the way, they're over $1 billion in debt again. All right, we'll be right back. Well, not right back, about 5 minutes. Just take a little break here and come back with me and Josh Reeves on Coast to Coast AM.